الحمد لله الحمد لله وكفى وسلام على عباده الذين اصطفى، أما بعد، اللهم صل على سيدنا محمد وعلى آل سيدنا محمد وبارك وسلم. So we'll try to cover at least two diseases in this midnight session. The first one of those is something called بغي, something called ظلم. It's very close, there's closely related terms. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says in the Quran, after أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم فلما أنجاهم إذا هم يبغون في الأرض. And this is oftentimes the nature of man, بغير الحق, right, without any right. When in the Quran, multiple places talks about this very vivid imagery, alluding to it like a person who is in the middle of an ocean. And that is one of the most helpless situations that a person can be in, all right? Because over there, who's gonna help you in the midst of those crashing waves? There's not a voice. There's not a ear to hear your voice. There's not a hand to lift you up. There's not, you know, a line or there's nothing for you to sound anchor. You are literally, absolutely, utterly helpless. There's nothing. You know, even when I was young, other than being traumatized by Jaws, you know, one of my great fears used to be the fact that, you know, just finding yourself in the middle of an ocean and just drowning. In fact, when I was a very young child, I actually almost did drown. When I was, I don't know, maybe six, seven years old, we were on a dock somewhere. My dad went, he left me on the pier, and I saw him jump. So I said, yeah, why don't I jump? So I just jumped, and when he came back from swimming, I didn't know how to swim. He comes back and he says, where's the kids? And there was no kids on the pier. And so then he went searching for me somewhere down at the bottom of the water. And I still, like, I mean, I don't know, 40 years later, I can still remember what the water looked like around. And, you know, it slowly things just start closing on you. You just sort of accept the fact that you're down there. And in that situation, right, when the person has no one to call, from the inside, people call Allah. It's programmed inside people. You know, there's black mass recordings of people from the Soviet Union who have been categorically and systematically programmed into a narrative of atheism. That's all they've ever known. That's all that they've been inculcated from their entire lives, really. And when they're, you know, those KGB forces or whatever, their air forces, when their planes are going down, you know, you have black box recordings and they're like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. Where did that come from? Right? It's a reflection of the fact that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala took an ahd from all of this, that أَلَسْتُ بِرَبِّكُمْ قَالُوا بَلَا شَهِدْنَا. People say, I don't remember, but your heart remembers. That voice inside you that makes you look for God, that makes you look, you know, one of my teachers, he said that if you feel thirsty, that's how you know that there's water. Right? If your heart is thirsty for Allah, is searching for something, is searching for God, is searching for a higher power, that itself is a proof that that higher power must exist somewhere. And so, this idea that when a person is in that situation and, you know, they call out in sincerity to Allah, then Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala saves them and He brings them back to shore. Right? They find their footing on land and they almost want to kiss the ground that they touch. And they just break down in tears. And their heart is full of gratitude. And they know that in that moment, without a doubt, that there is a God. That yaqeen that that person has the first time they step on shore, ajib if we could have that yaqeen, and ajib if we could have that type of iman. But then what happens? In short order, al-insan, he's from nisyan. They forget. That falamma anjahum, we save them. Right, you told me that, you know, you're gonna come back to, you know, on shore, and you come, it give you another a lease on life, that you're gonna do right. And what do? They said, "Idha hum yabghuna fil ard." They do baghi in the world. Right, they transgress. And that's why, you know, human beings, when they're desperate, and that's why you're so ghaddar, ya ibn Adam. You know, like, you know, the person who's going to be seeing the gates of Jannah, he wants to be close, and he said, if I give you this, I'm not going to ask for anything else. He said, yeah, no, I'm not going to ask for anything. You get it over there, and he said, ooh, that smells really good. Maybe I want to just go a little bit closer. You know, it's just, we don't know ourselves. And Allah knows us so well. And so we're very treacherous and very deceptive and very manipulative. And that's what happens, is that when people, Allah gives it to that person, then they just turn against the very person that saved them. And a person might hear this and they're like, yeah, that's what a messed up person. I can't believe anyone would ever do something like that. But there is hardly a person who is listening to me right now, except if you look back in your life, you can think of at least one instance when you were in that ocean. I don't care if it was your MCAT, or you had an algebra test on Monday and you actually thought it was on Tuesday, and you show up to class and you're like, oh, there's an algebra test today. It could be anything, right? You forgot your wife's anniversary and you thought World War III is going to break loose. It could be, but there was a point where you were making dua like that, right? You could have lost your $100 when you were a student. It could have been so many different things. And you made that sincere dua and Allah answered your dua. And in that moment, it was crystal clear that there is an Allah. And now you're like, I should be really pious and I should be really good. And then you're not. And in fact, we forget it so much that now years later, when we're reminded, they're like, yeah, I remember what that felt like. I remember when that happened. But it's so hard to change. Change is really hard. And Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala knows that. And this is going to happen in the Akhirah, that people are going to say that, let me go back. I'll do right this time. And Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, "Kalla, innaha kalimatun huwa qailuha." I said, no way. Are you kidding me? This is just something that you're saying with your mouth. These are just words. Because every single day that you got up, I was giving you a new life. I was giving you a chance to go back and make right. I gave you 365, forget about one chance. People saying just one chance. I gave you 365 chances every single year for 40 years of your life, 50 years of your life, 60 years of your life, and you didn't make that change. What's going to magically happen that you're going to make a change now? Right, give me a break. It doesn't work like that. إِنَّهَا كَلِمَةٌ هُوَ قَائِلُهَا. And so the sad thing is that when people are, when they make this baghi and they make this transgression, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, يَا أَيُّهَا النَّاسِ إِنَّمَا بَغْيُكُمْ عَلَىٰ أَنفُسِكُمْ. This transgression that you're going to do, it's going to be on your head. Right? You think that you're transgressing against Allah. You think that you're transgressing against me, that it's going to somehow hurt Allah, that somehow it's going to harm Allah, somehow that is going to diminish the kingdom and the majesty and the magnificence of Allah. It absolutely makes no difference to Allah. If all of creation were to get together and worship Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala perfectly, it would not increase the majesty of Allah. And if all of creation were to get together and commit the most heinous and disobedient acts that could be conceivable by man, it would not diminish the grandeur of Allah. Right? He's Ali, he's Kabir. He's above all that. But that baghi, that transgression, that disobedience, he said, عَلَىٰ أَنفُسِكُمْ, is against yourself. رَبِّي إِنِّي ظَلَمْتُ نَفْسِي. And what a terrible enemy. People think that they have haters on the outside. They're always looking around for enemies that are on the outside. That someone's going to steal from me. Someone's going to harm me. I need to have insurance. I need to have this. They're worried about dangers from the outside. We're the most dangerous people to ourselves. We're the ones who sabotage our own akhirah. No one else can do that. No one else can screw up your akhirah except yourself. And we do it to ourselves. We do ourselves in. It just makes no sense. The one person who should be fighting for you is you. But people don't do it. And the reason, if you look in the Arabic language, the word baghi comes from bagha, right? Like ibtagha, to seek something. And what happens is, this is why baghi occurs, is that people who do baghi or transgress are seeking some type of worldly gain. They're seeking some type of worldly pleasure, and this, the pursuit of that pleasure, you know, we say in the American sort of the bedrock of our culture, the pursuit of happiness, right? In the pursuit of happiness, in the pursuit of pleasure, one of the side effects of that is that a person becomes so engrossed and so enamored and so munhamik in that pursuit that they exceed all bounds. They transgress and they go into areas where they're not supposed to go into. They transgress the rights of others. And so the root of this baghi is something called want. Right? People just want things. And when I say want, it actually goes way beyond, you know, people. It's not just like wanting more money in the bank or wanting a better job or wanting a nicer car. Want is a lot deeper than that. People want, for example, not to work. People want pleasure. People want a life of leisure. People actually want a lot of things that aren't even good for them. Right? People want thrills. They want they want affection. They want attention. They want validation. They want the feeling of power. They want the feeling of fame. They want not even wealth itself. They want the feeling of being wealthy. This is different from wanting wealth. That's a separate disease. But they want to live in this castle in the clouds where they feel wealthy. Right? And whether that entails, that's why they'll tip the bellman 50 bucks. Not because they want to give the bellman 50 bucks, but all the other billionaires do that. So I want to be able to feel like that for a few days. That's why one of the reasons that many people who are rich, they like the feeling of going to 5-star or 6-stars or 7-star if you're in Dubai hotels, because they make you feel rich, even if you're only affording 1 or 2 nights. You're basically paying someone to make yourself feel special. They don't really love you, right? Or they don't really know your name. I mean, you paid $1,000 a night. They better say, "Hello, Mr. Ahmed," right? I mean, if they didn't do that, what worth your $1,000 worth? People want or seek this feeling of supremacy. They seek or want the feeling of being right. And this desire or this want, this pursuit, to attain these feelings, in the pursuit of that, they mow down everyone in their way. And they mow down all the rules in this way. Then they start making these long games. There's how many people there are who they say that, you know, they're sort of semi-interested in Islam, but they're like get involved in the masjid, not because they want to serve the masjid, but because they want to be on the board. Why? Because they'll never be the senator. They know they'll never be the prince, the president. That's their little fiefdom, right? How many aunties there may be that start a Quran group in their house? Not necessarily because they're interested in what the Quran has to say, right? Because otherwise they would have called someone who actually knows what they're doing. But so just so they go and get together, and one of them can feel like, look, I'm a sheikha, right? Let me tell you what I think this verse means. Because no one's going to invite you in the masjid to give a talk, so I'll invite everyone to my house so I can give a talk. And I can feel super special. Right? This is seeking. Right? And it's actually, and this is the root of, petty politics at work. This is the root of backstabbing in corporate America. This is the root of power moves that you have, you know, with multinationals. And this is the root of multinational and international geopolitics. These huge paradigm shifts that we've seen historiographically and in the current times, if you actually follow them to their root, you do a root cause analysis, is baghi. At the root of all of that is baghi. And it can destroy nations. Go ask the Syrians what baghi did to them. Go ask the Yemenis what baghi did to them. Go ask the Uyghur Muslims what baghi did to them. Go ask the Rohingya Muslims what baghi did to them. Go ask the children of Palestine what baghi did to them. It destroys lives. It destroys nations. destroys civilizations. It's not a small disease at the heart. It's not something that, oh, it's okay if we purify ourselves of the heart and this will be nice if we get rid of it. If you don't take care of it, there is fasad in the earth. لَحُدِّمَتْ صَوَامِعُوا وَبِيعُوا وَسَلَوَاتُوا وَمَسَاجِ يُذْكَرُوا فِيهَا اسْمُ اللَّهِ. There's destruction, utter destruction in the world. The seeking of ascendancy and this desire to want shine all on yourself. Like people sometimes, like, and you, it's really strange. Go to a dinner party. In a dinner party, there's so many diseases of the heart that actually just comes out. If you're looking, right? If you're looking. I can't tell you, like, you know, so when you're in training, in your suluk, I would feel so dirty every time, even if I didn't say many words. After I went and just had a normal dinner party, I came back, I would just feel dirty inside. Because in the process of human interactions, many of our own deficiencies become manifest. If you're actually looking, right? If you're sensitive enough to look, you're like, I didn't need to say that. Why did I feel that? So for example, say you're sitting there and everyone's asking questions to someone else, or someone else makes the funniest jokes, or someone else has all the attention and the light is on them, and you're not feeling good about that, so now you're thinking about yourself, what I should say next to bring it towards yourself. That's a problem. Right? That's a problem. People, the idea is that we should just be like, live in the shadows. Like we're just like nothing. And this idea of trying to get shine on yourself, seeking the shine, one of the things to bear in mind is that our shine doesn't come from people's eyes in our deen. Our shine comes from a nur that exists within the heart, and from the heart it rises onto the face. And so our shine doesn't come from the outside, it comes from the inside. And anyone who seeks shine from the outside sacrifices shine from the inside. Those two can't coexist. It will bring darkness from the inside. So, how do you deal with this disease? The way that you deal with this disease is that people have to learn to stay in their lane. Right? To stay on your side. Right? There is, and the fact of the matter is that the boundaries around you, how much space you're given, is really not that much. Right? It's actually very is a very small amount of space that define the parameters or the perimeter around an individual, because there's not a lot that other people owe us. There's just not. And any expectation beyond that oftentimes will force us to step into other people's territory. And so when people, for example, don't honor us, and people don't do X, Y, and Z for us, and people feel bad about it, and they try to go and get mine. First of all, it wasn't yours to begin with, right? You're not getting yours, you're getting theirs. That's a problem. Number one, when people, quote-unquote, fall short of your expectations or have shortcomings, just acknowledge the good that exists in them and just let the rest go, right? There's no one who's perfect. No one's an angel. Neither you nor me. No one's going to be perfect. But whatever good that people proffer, take the good from them and then overlook their shortcomings. A person who has this problem or this disease of belly is in several difficulties. The first difficulty that they fall into is that they are embroiled in what we call a vain pursuit. A trivial pursuit. What are you seeking? It's vapor. Fame is vapor. Attention is vapor. Right? Any of these things, the feeling of being wealthy, feelings are as ephemeral and as flippant and as capricious as thoughts or a bird's wings. They just fly away. And the very thing that you're trying to grab, it just leaves your hand before you can grab it. So what are you seeking? And even if you were to actually somehow grab it, the thing that you have in your hand, like, I got this, the thing I was seeking, doesn't amount to anything. Right? That's the problem. Everyone thinks that when they're pursuing something, that when I get there, it's going to be so awesome. But when you actually get there, there's nothing there. وَالَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا أَعْمَالَهُمْ كَسَرَابٍ بِقِيَّةٍ يَحْسَبُهُ الزَّمْآنُ مَاءً حَتَّى إِذَا جَاءَهُ. The person who disbelieve, these are people who are seeking things other than Allah. Right? That's the nature of a life of kufr. They're all about the dunya because there's no akhirah for them anyway. So they're seeking the dunya. أَعْمَالُهُمْ, their whole life, their all their actions, كَسَرَابٍ بِقِيَّةٍ, it's like a mirage in the desert. يَحْسَبُوا الزَّمْآنُ مَا. People are thirsty because they're empty inside and they're looking for something. So they think that they will find water there in that mirage. حَتَّى يَحْسَبُوا الزَّمْآنُ مَا حَتَّى إِذَا جَاءَهُ, until a person comes to it. لَمْ يَجِدْهُ شَيْعًا. There's nothing there. It's nothing there. You know, I've shared this story before, but it's just so powerful. Like, you know, many people know Sheikh Hussein Abdul Sattar, right? Who's, you know, now like a great celebrity in the medical world. There's probably hardly a medical student in the entire world that doesn't use pathoma now, right? When they're training for in disease and learning, it's a huge contribution. I mean, the IT department actually called him one day at the University of Chicago, and they're like, "What's going on?" He's like, "What do you mean, what's going on?" They said, "Your homepage, your landing page, has more hits than the entire University of Chicago Medical Center." Right? So that's an interesting problem to have. And this doesn't happen normally in medicine. I mean, yeah, you have like Golian, you have some, you know, some people that people recognize, some names. If you're in a particular niche, you might know that these two or three people, like if I were to name, there's so many physicians in the office, in the audience. If I were to tell them Jaffe, Fukar, Hassergen at MGH, like, I mean, they're like, who are these people? Like, they're big in my field. In HemePath, there's some of the people who wrote the blue book and, you know, defined the field, but no one else knows them, right? People live in their own little ivory towers. So for a person to have that much spread in medicine is a big deal, right? And so he had that. And I remember when my kids were in Zambia, they were like, one of our teachers, his advice was just make them scholars and just let them go in this like path of deen. And then, you know, I was just talking to him and he's like, "So what are your kids going to do?" And I said, "I don't know, I'll try to set up a business for them or something, you know, we'll figure it out." And he says, "But Maulana, what are you going to do for your kids?" And then he said, "You know what? Forget about it. What's the big deal?" And so his words really stuck with what he said afterwards. He said, "You know, what everyone is running after, so you know, being in an academic, and it's not just medicine, like in medicine there's like inner circles, like, you know, you want to be, you're not good enough just to be a doctor, you need to be an academic physician, like a doctor's doctor, and within academics you need to be at a top 10 cancer center, and if you're in a top 10 cancer center, you want to have, you know, 200 publications under your belt, and it's just like this smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller fiefdoms." And so he said that, and he said, "You know, we're here. And there's nothing here. Like everything that everyone's racing behind and trying to get these perfect USMLE scores and best residencies and be attending at the best place and years of toil. You get there and you're sitting in that office. You're just looking at cases, writing a couple of papers. It's like there's nothing here. حَتَّى إِذَا جَاءَهُ لَمْ يَجِدْهُ شَيْئًا. There's nothing there. Right? When you walk into your first mansion, you'll see there's nothing there. It's just a house. Right? When you drive your first BMW, you'll realize it's just a car. It's just, there's this thing. لَمْ يَجِدْهُ شَيْئًا. There's nothing there. So the first problem is that it's vain pursuits. The next one is that any time a person is moving towards creation, they're actually moving away from the Creator. That, and these people who are trying to find some type of satisfaction, they're actually digging a hole in the wrong desert. You're never going to find water. No matter how deep you dig, there's just no water there. Right? All these things that a person is seeking, the things that everyone is seeking, all of those things don't exist within the dunya, they actually exist with Allah. وَلِلَّهِ الْعَزَّةُ وَلِرَسُولِهِ وَلِلْمُؤْمِنِينَ وَلَكِنَّ الْمُنَافِقِينَ لَا يَفْقَهُونَ وَلَكِنَّ الْمُنَافِقِينَ لَا يَعْلَمُونَ. If you don't get this idea that izzah and respect and glow and light and ascendancy is for the believers, and the people of Allah, then fear that you might be in the category of the munafiqeen who just don't get it. Because this is their sifat. The people who are true in their faith, they completely understand that if you want any of these things, seek it with Allah. Right? What Umar radiallahu anhu, he said it beautifully. He says, "A'azana Allahu bil Islam." Right? Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has given us izzah with what? With Islam. Not with our degrees, not with our military might. Our power is with Allah. إِذَا فِي الْمَعْصِيَةِ غَلَبُونَ. And if we become equal to them in our disobedience to Allah, then they'll come overcome us, because the source of our power is Allah. And so if we have to seek something, we have to seek Allah. If I ask someone, what are you doing in your life? How many people, right, will you ever meet in your life that will say, I'm seeking the face of Allah? Right? You'll find many people that, yeah, I'm working on my bachelor's, I'm working on my MCAT, I'm trying to get promoted to associate, I'm building my practice, I'm making a partnership for an LLC, right? I'm trying to create a merger. People will tell you so many things. How many people will you ever meet in your life who will say that, I'm seeking the face of Allah? كُلُّ مَنْ عَلَيْهَا فَانْ وَيَبْقَى وَجْهُ رَبِّكَ ذُو الْجَلَالِ وَالْإِكْرَامِ. Everything else is fanny. Everything else is vapor. It's going. It's a mirage. The only thing that's real is Allah. So where are the seekers of Allah? Where are the seekers of wilaya? Where are the seekers of closeness of Allah? Where are they? And what will you earn with the pleasure of people if it earns the displeasure of Allah? So that's the second problem. With doing baghi, seeking anything other than Allah, it takes a person away from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. The third problem with baghi, people who transgress, is that it makes a person fake. Because when you're seeking other things, and you have that, by definition now you have an ulterior motive. And if you have an ulterior motive, that means you are not sincere. And if you're not sincere towards others, then you're fake. And that's a problem. Because that's the opposite of what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has instructed us. And that's the opposite of what Rasulullah taught us. He would actually take a bay'ah from the Sahaba, that you have a bay'ah, a nusku li kulli muslimin wa muslimah, that you would be sincere to every Muslim. You would be, that basically, in other words, be real. Right? You can't be fake. You can be sincere and do baghi. Those two things don't go. You can't say that I'm being really sincere, that's why I'm conquering your land. It doesn't work. Right? It's like, I really love the Native Americans. Let's just put all of them on a reservation and take their land because I really love them. It doesn't work that way. You can't. Those two things just don't go together. And you know, when you're being fake, you dispossess yourself of yourself. And that creates dissonance. And this is a recurrent theme when you see with diseases of the heart. The fourth problem with doing baghi is it puts a person in a situation when they commit zulm. And we already mentioned this in a previous talk, that it comes in hadith, أَذُلْمُ ذُلُمَاتُ يَوْمَ الْقِيَامَةِ. That a person who commits oppression will face multiple darkness. You did one zulm, but in hadith it says zulumat, multiple darknesses on the day of qiyamah. That is at a time that people are just going to want some light. نُورُهُمْ يَسْعَى بَيْنَ أَيْدِيهِمْ وَبِأَيْمَانِهِمْ بُشْرَاكُمُ الْيَوْمِ. There will be some people who have light. They'll know where to go. When you'll need some light. If you've ever been in the dark, right? If it's pitch dark and you have your glasses somewhere, you can't even find your glasses. How are you going to find your way to Jannah across the pool sirat if you don't have light? Right? And if you slip on the sirat, where are you falling to? Right? Falling into the pits of Jahannam. It's not a joke. So if you need light, right, you have to avoid zulm. And zulm is, the ulama have said, is wad'u shay fi ghayri mahallihi, is to place something where it doesn't belong. And this can get very subtle. Means that if you place your anger on someone where it doesn't belong, that's zulm. Whether it was your children or your spouse, or your husband, or your parents, or your friends or your job or anything. If you put something where it doesn't belong, take any emotion, take your hope, take your fear, take your excitement, take your anxiety. If you are placing it where it doesn't belong, at some level you're committing zulm. It can get very subtle. If you place your expectations where they don't belong, sometimes we have expectations from the people around us, that can create an element of zulm. So people who are doing baghi, they undergo so many different processes that create zulm on the people around them. So how do you treat this problem of bughl? One of them is to remember that all of this, all of these things that a person seeks, all of these things are temporary. When people will wake up in the hereafter, they'll realize that it was just like they tarried for a few moments in this world. Everything that we thought was so important, everything that you cried about, you understand that those tears were so much in vain. You'll be asked, قَالَ كَمْ لَبِثْ قَالُ لَبِثْنَا يَوْمًا وَبَعْضَ يَوْمٍ فَاسْأَلِ الْعَادِينَ. How long did you stay in the dunya? Right? They didn't say, oh, I was there for 70 years and 80 years. No, that's like a day, part of a day. It's like, you know how you just go to a coffee shop one afternoon? It'll just be like that. You felt like you just went to the coffee shop and you came home. Our real home is Jannah, not here. And people place all their hopes, all their desires, all their pursuits, everything, all their eggs in this basket. It's going to get crushed. Right, the Imam was reading in the dua and in the qunut that don't make the dunya mablagha ilmina, right? And don't make it our only himma and only desire and only purpose. That's something to bear in mind. Fasalil adin, ask the people who are actually counting. It's like, I wasn't really counting. Even though when you're in this world, we're like really counting. But over there, it's immaterial. The second thing to remember is the importance of hukukul ibad. There's two types of rights in the deen. There's the rights of Allah and the rights of the servants of Allah. The rights between you of Allah, between you and Him, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is very Rahman, He's very Rahim, He can forgive, right? But what is between human beings? People are super catty. And they're super catty in this world. Imagine what they're going to be like in the Akhirah. No one's going to leave anyone's neck. Right, people sometimes they act up if you don't give them $5. Right, you think they're gonna give up their sawab and their jannah for you in the akhirah. They will be the first people to throw you under the bus, on any flippant premise that they can. And you know, the Prophet ﷺ, he asked the Sahaba, do you know who the muflis is, the one who's bankrupt? And they said, is man la dinara lahu wa la dirham lahu, aw kama qal. Then they said, the one who doesn't have a dinar or dirham. He said, no, that's not the person who's muflim, that's not the one who's bankrupt. The one who's bankrupt is the person who's going to come on the day of Qiyamah, he will have his good deeds. He stayed in itikaf, he listened to the talks, he prayed his tarawih, he read his Quran, he made his daily zikr, they did their wirth, they donated to the masjid, they did all these nice things. And then, you know, Ahmed is going to come and he said, you backbited me on Tuesday the 14th, you know, in this 2021. He says, yeah, I'll take that tarawih from you, sure, no problem, right? And another person is going to come and, you know, Zayd is going to come. And he said, oh, I'll take your Laylatul Qadr, right? That one that you cried, yeah, I like that one. Let me take that from him. And one by one, everything that you are banking on, they're going to rob you blind. And then you're left with nothing. And when you have nothing left, then they will start dumping their bad deeds on you. You spend your entire youth not doing zina, and then now there's zina in your book of deeds. You never did it. But there is nothing, you have to pay it off. So they dump their zina on you, they dump their drinking on you, they dump their pork on you, they dump their backbiting on you. One after another, they said, just take all the filth. The person who literally saw the gates of Jannah in front of them is now at the gates of hell. That's the muflis. So hukukul ibad are not a joke. So when a person, even if a person is desiring something in the dunya, this want cannot become so inordinate or so excessive that it transgresses other people's rights. The third thing to remember is that any of these things that people what's that called? A person is seeking, you know, in terms of business. I don't know if there's anyone who's in business here, but you, whenever you make a business decision, people are always looking for a positive ROI. Right? No one looks at a stock and say, oh man, that one only loses 1% every year. Let me go for that one. I mean, it makes no sense. Everyone is looking for the biggest return on their investment that they can. So who would buy a depreciating asset? The dunya and everything that it contains is a depreciating asset. Everything. Your beauty will fade. Your house, no matter how beautiful, will fade. And if you don't know that it does that, put it as a rental and look at the IRS and see how much you can deduct every year for depreciation on your rental. Even the IRS recognizes that the dunya is a depreciating asset. Muslims haven't figured it out. Your car is a depreciating asset. Everything. So why invest in it? Right? Why buy a boat that's sinking? The boat is sinking, and you're like, let me get on the boat. That makes no sense. Right? Grab onto the rope of Allah, it will pull you into the heavens. وَاعْتَصِمُوا بِحَبْلِ اللَّهِ جَمِيعًا. And then the final thing is to look at the final outcome of those people who had come in the past. Right? Look at the most beautiful women that live in the world. Now you don't know their name. Look at the great rulers of the world. Right? They're living under the earth. Look at the great civilizations. They talk about the rise of civilizations and then the fall of civilization. Has there been any civilization that has never had a decline? Right, you talk about the great civilizations in human history, whereas the Greek civilization, the Ottomans, the Mongols, they don't even include the Chinese, right? You could, you know, the Greco, the Roman, the mighty Roman Empire. There was a handful of great civilizations. Right? Where do you see them now? قُلْ سِيرُوا فِي الْأَرْضِ فَانْظُرْ كَيْفَ كَانَ آخِبَةُ الْمُكَذِّبِينَ. Where are they? They're all leveled. They're all leveled. Everyone had their heyday. You look at Ad, look at Thamud, look at Qawmi Lut, look at the people of Shu'aib, Ashab al-Aikata, حَاسِبًا إِلَّا عَلَى Lut, صَيْحَةً وَاحِدًا فَكَانُكَ حَشِيمٍ مُحْتَضِرٍ. Look at every single one. They're all decimated. They were just destroyed. So what is a person seeking?